You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
2 days ago, Russia attacked the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, coming just after Russia moved in on the Chernobyl exclusion zone. On the 28th of February, the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States confirmed that 70 soldiers were killed with a vacuum bomb. Tension is continuously increasing within the area, with military assistance from Western allies being given to Ukraine, and Putin putting Russia's nuclear forces on high alert. I spoke with Samuel Hickey, a research analyst at the Center for Arms Control and Non-Proliferation, about the weapons being used and attacks on nuclear power plants. I began by asking, what's the main concern around Russia attacking nuclear facilities in Ukraine?
This is the first war to involve combat around active reactors. And these reactors require a constant supply of electricity and water to keep their cores and their spent fuel pools cool. So no nuclear reactor is designed to operate in a war zone. In fact, this is the first time that a civilian nuclear reactor has ever come under military assault. It is important to note, however, that this is that the situation is under control at the moment. There was a fire at a separate facility. It was very close to the reactors at that site. The building is a training or construction facility adjacent to the reactor, which caused a fire that was eventually extinguished. But actually, the firefighters that were on their way to this reactor even came under assault, and there was gunfire that was going on in their efforts just to put it out. So that was the situation then. And if you'll indulge me, there's actually a human component of this that sometimes gets lost in it. So two people were injured, and both of them were security personnel. But it was critical, and a lot of experts were highlighting this, that they were not operators or technical people. So nuclear power plants rely on and are operated by people. And these people live in the town or the village near the plant, and many are engulfed in the fighting as we speak. So these people need to travel from their homes to the reactor, which means shuttling through a war zone. So this is where, if there are ever any security issues or safety issues at these facilities, suddenly the war has a whole lot of ways of impacting the security of a plant. So actually, remarkably, even before this fire took place, there was workers from the plant in southern Ukraine and local civilians erected barricades on the access roads in an effort to prevent Russian troops who now control the area around the facility from taking it over. But if we were to start to look at some of the potential ways that this could all play out, because hopefully there will be no more attacks on civilian nuclear reactors in Ukraine, but there are 15 reactors. This was actually the largest nuclear power plant, so it had 6 reactors there. But if we wanted to start thinking about the concerns, essentially, so the fuel inside of a nuclear reactor is very radioactively hot. So it has to be continuously cooled. And this is the key part, is that if a war has a number of different ways that can disrupt the cooling of the reactor, the primary means of getting energy to cool the reactor can be thwarted when the electricity grid is attacked. And that's something that I understand Russia is doing now, but it's a very common tactic in a war. And it's likely that this sort of thing will continue. So that could be a problem. Nuclear power plants often have, or they all have, backup generators, but those don't necessarily last for long periods of time. So that's really where we start to see different scenarios that could play out that would be rather dangerous.
Have there been similar attacks on other power plants? And sort of what was the result of those?
So this is the first time that our nuclear reactor has come under military assault. However, attacking just general electricity grids and other power plants, that happens all the time. It happens incredibly often. It's a very useful tactic in a war, because at the end of the day, this war has already become about the civilians, right? We actually really expected that Russia would be able to move through and take Kyiv far faster than it has been. The Ukrainian forces have been exceptional in this, and the Ukrainian civilians as well. So now, it seems that Putin has turned a lot of his ire on the civilians, and this is where we're seeing a lot more attacks. But just throughout history, making sure that people don't have access to the things that they need, just the basic necessities, or possibly electricity so that they can communicate with the rest of the world. All of these things are tactics in a war to help suffocate the civilians.
And just moving away from the power plants and more onto what weapons Russia may have, do you have any insight on this?
Russia, so the United States and Russia have together over 90% of the nuclear weapons in the world. There are 9 countries with nuclear weapons, but just the United States and Russia have together over 90%. Each have about 6,000 warheads in their stockpile. However, under the terms of the last remaining treaty between these two countries, New START, both are only allowed to deploy about 1,500 nuclear weapons. Now, Putin has actually made explicit threats about use of nuclear weapons in order to keep the United States, NATO, other countries from coming to the aid of Ukraine. Now, Ukraine is not under the United States nuclear umbrella. It does not have nuclear weapons itself, nor is it a NATO ally. So the United States or any other countries are not, you know, they do not have to come to the aid of Ukraine with such military support. So Putin is able to essentially wage a conventional war and using his nuclear weapons as a shield to keep other countries away, because he is threatening, if you do come to Ukraine's aid, if you do make this more difficult, I will escalate to this far, far greater level. So that's really the key part here, where the myth that deterrence was a way for us to keep the peace, that's really not the case.
When reading one of the articles that your center has, it discussed the difference between nuclear weapons and thermobaric weapons. Could you just explain the difference between this?
We put this piece together initially because there were some press reports talking about how they're the biggest conventional weapon, or like, you know, the poor man's not nuclear weapon. They cannot be considered at the same level at all. They are just not in the same class. So a thermobaric weapons are a subclass of volumetric weapons, a family that includes thermobaric weapons and fuel air explosives. They consist of a fuel container and 2 separate explosive charges. So when a volumetric weapon is dropped or launched, the first charge detonates to disperse the fuel particles. And then the second charge ignites the dispersed fuel and oxygen in the air, creating a blast wave of extreme pressure and heat that has the potential to reverberate and to create a partial vacuum in an enclosed space. And they're often used to hurt civilians, and they are quite indiscriminate and uncontained. So they are very, very dangerous and quite deadly. However, the largest one ever tested was actually by the Russians in 2007. It had a yield of 44 tons. And just for the comparison, so the smallest nuclear weapon that the United States has, and this one happens to be deployed in Europe, has a yield of 300 tons. So already in order of magnitude, it is 10 times bigger. And that is the smallest. Most nuclear weapons are vastly, vastly bigger. The other key point is that nuclear weapons leave behind radiation. So if a nuclear weapon is detonated, there will be radiation that will, you know, leave the space uninhabitable for years and years. Whereas a thermobaric weapon, that's not the case. So the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States actually confirmed that Russia has used vacuum bombs or thermobaric weapons in Ukraine. And they've done this before. They were used in Syria. They were used in Chechnya. But with the comparison to nuclear weapons, we did want to separate that these two are very different, because if the world starts to believe that Russia is using something that is akin to nuclear weapons, then that suddenly brings, you know, the rest of the world in, and we could easily escalate into a nuclear conflict, which we certainly do not want to happen, and we do not want to happen under false pretenses.
That was Samuel Hickey, a research analyst at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, speaking about Russian weapons in Ukraine.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.